you would take your Bibles and open them to the 29th chapter of the book of Genesis, 29th chapter. Before we get started into the 29th chapter, let's kind of take a quick look at our chart that says family tree above it. And let's notice how this tree has grown. Remember, if you will, when in Genesis chapter 12, when Abraham was commanded to leave the Ur of Chaldees, we start with Terah, his father. And remember, if you will, that there were three sons. One had passed away, Haran, who was Lot's dad. Nahor as another son that was living, and of course Abraham. Well, the descendants of Abraham went from Sarah to Hagar to Ishmael to Cutram. And from that marriage between Abraham and Sarah, you wound up with the Ishmaelite nation, and you wound up with the Midianite nation. We talked about the Midianites on Wednesday night. Now, as time went by, the Ishmaelites and the Midianites merged into one family, because they seem to have located close together in close proximity to each other. And I guess they began to intermarry and have interrelationships. And they merged into basically the Midianite family. And remember, if you will, we pointed out that the Midianites were the one responsible for buying Joseph and selling him into slavery to the Egyptians. And then, later on, it was the Midianites that caused Moses some problems, and we could just go on and on talking about the Midianites. They come from that lineage of Abraham and Sarah that came from Terah. Then you had Nahor. Now, from Nahor's lineage comes Sarah. And from Nahor's lineage, he goes and he marries a descendant of Haran, his brother, who had passed away. In other words, he married Lot's sister. So you see how that family tree is drawn together with the three sons and their descendants in a marriage. Then from Haran and from Lot and from Milcah, if you'll remember, there was a problem with Lot and his daughters. Anybody remember what that problem was?
They thought they were the last ones left on earth, didn't they?
Yes, they thought they were the last ones. They slept with Lot, and two children were born. And from those two children, you have the Moabite nation, and you have the Amorite nation. Now, the reason we're kind of going over this is because as we go through the Old Testament, you're going to see how these nations come in play with the Israelite nation. So now you've got from Haran, you've got the Moabite nation and the Amorite nation. You come from Nahor down, and you look at Nahor and Bethuel, and you've got Laban and Rebekah. Now, we're going to notice, as we pick up in chapter 29, that this lineage is going to spread some more because of the marriage of Jacob into the family of Nahor. So you're going to see again how these family trees intermingle with one another, intermarry with one another, but eventually would be in opposition to one another. When the Israelites began to spread, they began to go into the land of Canaan, and as time goes by, you're going to see where there's even battles and feuds in between these nations. Any questions or comments as to what we've gone through before we start into chapter 29?
Where were the Ishmaelites?
The Ishmaelites?
The mother was...
They came off of Ishmael.
Right, but where did they live?
They live right in the corner section of Canaan, along with the Midianites, and that there's a section that is kind of looped off. We don't have it recorded in our chart here on this color-coded chart, but it was a small section right at the edge of Canaan, and I think the Mesopotamian area is where they merged, because if you remember, when Moses left Egypt, he traveled across through Canaan into where the Moabites or the Ishmaelites, the Midianites, were living, into that section, and to get away from Pharaoh and get away from Egypt. All right, notice, if you will, on Wednesday night, we finished chapter 28. And in chapter 28, we talked about Isaac and Jacob and Esau and the feud that they got into, because Esau, first of all, sold his inheritance for a bowl of soup or pottage. And then later on, he was tricked out of his blessings. Remember, if you will, there were two things that the firstborn of each family had the rights to. They had the right to the birthright, and they had the right to the blessing.
What was the birthright as opposed to the blessing?
I don't know. I guess this inheritance was some way divided into sections, and part of it was considered the birthright, part of it was considered the blessing. So I don't know how the two separated themselves, and what would be considered the birthright, what would be considered the blessing.
But it seemed like the blessing was more important, because that's when he got so angry.
He wasn't terribly upset when he was tricked out of the blessings. Either it was worth more, or the very fact that he had nothing to do with it, and he was tricked out of it, it was stolen from him. And to think about that his brother and his mother did that to him, I mean, he was so angry over it. His sole purpose was to wait for his daddy to die. Evidently, they thought that Abraham was about to pass from this life out into eternity, because it was all as if Esau was just waiting until his dad died, and then he would take the life of Jacob. But at the time all of this hits, Abraham was, I think, about 37 years old, in that range. And he didn't die until 175. So he lived quite a long time. But as we notice in chapter 29, in the end of chapter 28, mother takes Jacob to one side and says, "Now look, you've got to get out of town. And what you need to do, you need to go back to my father's house. And you need to find your wife." And that was the excuse to get Jacob out of town and basically get him away from Esau for fear of Esau taking Jacob's life. So Jacob begins his trip back to her father's house, which is in Mesopotamia, the same place that Abraham left, and to find his wife. And that's what we pick up on in chapter 29. Jacob getting to Rebekah's family, or to the land where Rebekah's family was living. And notice, if you will, it makes this statement in chapter 29, verse 5. He said unto them, "Know you Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he said unto them, "Know you?" And he said, "We know him." And he said unto them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep." So Jacob understands now that he is at the right place, that Laban is still living, and Laban is still doing well. Why do you think Jacob was so interested in Laban? He had never met him, didn't know him particularly. But why was it so important that Laban would be okay? Okay. Remember, if you will, he's there to do two things. He's there to escape Esau's wrath, but he's also there to do what? Find a wife. And if you found a wife in that period of time, how did you obtain that wife?
From the father.
You had to go, and you had to ask daddy. And you had to have daddy's blessings. And it was normally said that when you went with money. Now, daddy was going to bless you by letting him have one of your daughters. You were going to bless him by leaving some monetary means behind. What did Jacob at this point not have?
He didn't have any money.
What was the difference between Isaac and Jacob when Isaac went there?
He had
money. And he had camels, and he had material things, and he got his wife and left. Now, it's going to be a little bit different scenario with Jacob, because Jacob had to leave in a hurry. Though Jacob evidently had gotten Esau's birthright, and even at this point, Esau's blessing. Evidently, these birthrights and these blessings at this point had not been dispersed, because he leaves, he recognizes he's in the right location, and the servants say, "Oh, by the way, his daughter Rachel is on her way. She'll be at the well at any moment." And he sees Rachel. And he likes what he saw. Notice what it says. Verse 9. While he yet spake, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban's mother's brother, that Jacob went near, rolled a stone from the well's mouth, watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother, and Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the things of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to the house. And he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, "Surely thou art bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh." And he abode with him the space of a month. And Laban said unto Jacob, "Because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be?" And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Now, most of you are well familiar with this as to what happened. Remember, if you will, Jacob is there at the very moment to get away from his brother, whom he had taken his birthright, had taken his blessings, all at the hand and with the help of his mother. And he was about to receive what he had just been dishing out. Because they make a trade between dad and son-in-law. I want your daughter Rachel for a wife. Didn't have any money. So the deal was, he was to work how many years?
7 years.
To be able to get the hand of Rachel to marry. At the end of the 7 years, he fulfills his service to him, and his dad gives his daughter. The only problem was, what daughter?
Wrong one.
Now, when they know. Did you say that? He wanted Rachel. But Daddy gave him Leah. And he didn't know it till the next morning when the veil came off. And evidently Rachel had prettier eyes than Leah, let's put it that way. And Jacob was upset. He goes right back to Daddy and says, "What have you done to him?" And Daddy says, "Look, it's our tradition that I can't give you my younger daughter. I've got to get rid of my old daughter first." That's basically what he was saying.
How old was Jacob?
Jacob would have been, I don't know, I'd have to do some arithmetic on that.
He was an old man at that time.
I'm going to say, let me see. I would think he was on up there. He wasn't no 18-19-year-old boy. And I don't guess Leah was either. So Daddy was thinking about the older daughter and says, "I can't give you Rachel unless you take Leah first." So it wasn't like, "Okay, give me the pack." I don't work like that, Daddy said. "You got to work another 7 years. That first 7 years was for Leah. Now you got to work 7 more years for Rachel." Now it doesn't take long to do the math on that. 14 years. He had been away from home, working to pay for Rachel. So he gets a really nice dose of what he himself had been dishing out back home. But not only only now does he have two wives. But what did Daddy give each one of those wives? Two concubines. Now, later on, when we start looking at this family tree, it's going to continue to expand. Because just like Abraham had a family that came from it, from Hagar, and another family that comes from Sarah, Jacob is going to have four lines. Because not only did he have children from Leah, children from Rachel, but he has children from each of their concubines. So you see how these nations are going, how they're flowing, how this family tree is just continually advancing. But when you stop and think about that, remember, if you will, in Genesis chapter 20, God promised Abraham that he would bless him how?
With a great nation. I mean, lots of people.
A great nation. Later on, those nations, it would become nations. Because not only is the Israelite nation going to be blessed, but many nations would be blessed because of Abraham's faith. Now we're seeing now how these many nations evolved, how they came into existence, and how we today can lay claim to be Abraham's children, not by blood, but by faith. The same faith that Abraham had. So we're seeing how these many nations are coming about and how they're flowing. All right, now notice, if you will.
Did God have a hand in this?
Did
all of this?
Yes. Had to. Remember, if you will, God works today through His written word left behind by the apostles and the prophets of old. And He blesses us through His providential care over us. But back during this dispensation of time, God could be involved miraculously in their lives. God could be involved providentially in their lives. And God could be involved in their lives through the word spoken, sometimes directly, sometimes through angelic beings, sometimes through the prophets. So yes, God's hand was in it in many ways when you stop and think about it. Like, it was God's intention that it was not going to be Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It was going to be Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, though Jacob was not going to be the firstborn of Isaac. Because, as we said, the Bible says in the Hebrew epistle that his brother was a profane man. And we said a profane man was one that did not necessarily care about the necessities of things, the importance of matters. He was a kind of happy-go-lucky, let's go hunting, let's do this, but let's not really take anything serious. So I guess God could foresee that. Now, did God cause Rachel to do what she did? No. But God allowed that to bring about his means. If she had not done that, he would have figured another way, because he was in control, and it was going to be Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then, of course, Joseph is going to come into the lineage in one sense, but Jacob himself, through Judah, the seed's going to flow. So then it's going to be Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah. Remember from Shiloh, Judah. Then David. Then comes the Son of God. Though Joseph is going to play a huge part in making it possible for Judah's lineage to be able to bring David into the world. But of all those sons that's going to be born, remember, there's going to be 12 sons, one daughter, out of this marriage right here between Leah and Rachel and the two handmaidens.
Let's see. Would it be safe to say that back in, that they was just women were sold, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, men were there, so there were slaves.
Similar to what we would know slaves to be.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of ways they could wind up being there. You know, if we got in debt and couldn't pay our debt back, we could go to our debtor and say, I need to work it out. He would take us as a slave. And you would have a period of time to pay that debt back, and then there would be a time that you could be set free. Or you could make the choice and say, no, I'm going to stay here. So we'll see some of that come into existence as we get from the patriarchal system to the Mosaic system. You'll see a lot of these laws laid out in Leviticus and other places like that. All right, notice if you will, you get into chapter 30. And it tells you kind of how this family started or how it came about. The first thing we notice in chapter 30 is that Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children. Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead? Who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? So you can kind of see the same problem creeping into Jacob's life that crept into Abraham's life. Remember, Sarah came to Abraham the same way. Now this was after God had promised them that they would have so many children that they would be like the stars in heaven, sand and sea. She says, go in and sleep with my concubine, Hagar. Here comes Ishmael, and we know the outcome of that. Same thing is happening right here. The only problem, it didn't happen with the concubines first. Who did it happen with? Sisters. Two sisters married to the same man, and one was barren, couldn't have any children, and she comes to her husband, and it seems as if she's blaming the husband. And the husband basically tells her, you know, I can't help it that God has closed your womb. Then, notice what her reply is. It's the same. Go to my concubine. And she gave him in verse 4, Bilhah, her handmaid to wife, and Jacob went in to her. Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. Now notice you're going to see how the 12 tribes come back. The first son was Dan, born from the concubine of Rachel. The second one was Naphtali. And Leah saw that she had left Barry. She took Zillah, her maid, and gave it to Jacob. See what's happening now? Now, sister says, take my concubine. And from this concubine comes Gad and Asher. And in 14, look at this. And Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said unto Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband? And wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore, he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And you wonder why we got that family problems in this situation. Now, what's a mandrake?
The fruit of an herb formerly eaten by Oriental women, especially as it aids in conception.
Right. Normally, I looked at this the first time. I said, is this some kind of big old duck? They found out there in the fields. But evidently, it was a plant that grew wild. And it would be considered, as David said, an herb. And these people thought that if you would feed the animals, or if the wives ate these herbs, it would cause them to be more fruitful and multiply. In other words, it was a way to expand the family, whether it be if cattle were eating it or if people were eating it. Now, what's going on right here? Both sisters are trying to compete to see who can have the most children. And so Rachel says, okay, I want those mandrakes. I want to trade you my time with Jacob for the mandrakes. So Leah trades her son's mandrakes for Rachel's time with her husband. I don't know, maybe they spent 1 month with one wife and another month. I don't know how they worked that out. But it entered into the picture here. And so we see how that came to be. Now it goes on and it kind of mentions these children. It says, God hearkened in verse 17 unto Leah, she conceived, bare Jacob's fifth son, Issachar, Zebulun, and then the daughter, Diana. And God remembered that Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. She conceived, bare a son, and his name was Joseph. Now, was this the last son?
No.
What's going to be the last son? Benjamin. Baby Benjamin. And what happened at the birth of baby Benjamin? Rachel passes away. So that kind of caps out the family tree as far as the children go. Now, notice, if you will, what happens here is Laban and Jacob kind of enter into a business deal. Now, remember, 14 years had gone by, so some time is going on now since Jacob had gone back home. They were trying to decide who got what, how you split the income from the flocks and the herds. So they went down to saying, okay, you take the solid color, white or black animals, and I'll take the spotted. And then it'll be easy to say when the ewes lamb, okay, the white one is yours, the black one is yours, the spotted one is mine. So they split. And evidently that we've been talking about the mandrakes, but there was another way here they thought that they could multiply the flocks. And they would take some sticks and whittle these sticks or limbs or whatever and strike them down and put them in the water. And when the animals would drink the water, it would make them more productive than the others. So Jacob used that. He learned his lesson well back on that. And he got to the point that there became a feud between Jacob and Laban's family. So Laban is out harvesting the wool and cutting the lambs, and he was gone a few days, and when he gets back, what had happened? Anybody remember? Jacob had packed up his wives, his children, and his belongings and flocks and herds and hit the road. Some people think he had gotten as far as 300 miles. Before Laban gets home 3 days later, finds out what's happened, gets his people together, and finally catches him. And of course they confront one another. Work out the problem. Laban kisses his wives and his grandchildren and says goodbye to them, and he goes on his way, and Jacob continues back home to Canaan. Now notice, if you will, you get into chapter 32, and the closer he gets to home, word's gotten out. Esau understands that Jacob is coming back. And here comes Esau. Now, how do you think Jacob felt this?
Put the women in front.
He may have been thinking, I might ought to stay on with Laban. Because in spite of how many years had gone by, Jacob is still thinking, he gonna kill me. He gonna take my life. So he begins to think and divides everything up and says, one group this way, one group. But as Paul Harvey would say, you know the end of that story too, because what was the outcome of this meeting between Esau and Jacob?
It was a happy meeting.
Was happy as he could be. Hugged Jacob. Met his family and his children. And Jacob tried to pay him and pay him and pay him. And Esau said, I don't need your money, Jacob. I'm fine. I don't need, I don't want anything you got. So notice, if you will, he goes from having his birthright taken, his blessings taken, Jacob coming back willing to repent of what he had done and make those things right with Esau. And Esau says, everything is lovely. I don't want anything. And that kind of brings us to that meeting. And the last thing that we do as we close out chapter 32 is verse 22 of 32 says, he rose up that night, took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford of Jabbok. That's a river. And he took them and set them over the brook and went over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. When he saw that he had prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint, and he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel." So it's at this point that Jacob wrestles with this angel all night, throws his joint out of socket, that his blessing was, "You're no longer going to be called Jacob, you're going to be called Israel." So you see how this promise that is promised to Abraham is flowing from Abraham to Isaac, from Jacob, who is now Israel, and then it's going to hit later on. It's going to go from this to Judah. Now, who's going to be the firstborn of Jacob?
Be Reuben, wouldn't it?
Who?
Would it be Reuben?
It'd be old Reuben, that's right. Now, as you read ahead for Wednesday night, you're going to notice some events that's going to take place